Welcome to East Meets West, episode 239. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Roger Chang.
And it's Sunday.
It is Sunday.
As we always do, we're recording it live on the Twit Network. We do this every Sunday at 8 o'clock Eastern Time, 5 o'clock Pacific Time. If you're listening to the audio podcast, come join sometime. Sit in the chat room. Join Geek Filter and DV1 Band and Pretty Jumbles. And make fun of us while we say our things that we think. And get in big arguments with us. And that's what makes the show better.
Totally. Please interact with us. We oftentimes kind of run our well dry of ideas or topics to complain about. So having a fresh source of, very polemic arguments or something.
For instance, Knox Harrington saying, "I do not argue with you, Ace Detect," therefore starting an argument.
It's true. He is disagreeing. I don't know. Do you know Knox Harrington
That's
by name?
That's just contradiction.
But I also watched a great movie this weekend, and I wasn't sure I'd enjoy it, but I did.
What'd you watch?
It was The Fighter with Christian Bale, Mark Wahlberg. I'm trying to think who else was famous in it.
That was nominated for a Golden Globe, was it not?
Yes. And I wasn't sure what to expect. I mean, it's Christian Bale doing like a meth head, crack addict or whatever. And I must say he pulled it off.
Yeah.
Not sure how much of a stretch, but it was very fun. Not fun in that the movie was like all lighthearted, but it was just nice to see a movie where you see a very iconic or at least a very well-known actor and you get over, hey, that's Mark Wahlberg or that's Christian Bale and that's the character that they're portraying. And I think that speaks highly for any movie for me is when I forget who's acting or portraying that character. Instead, I just focus in on the character that they're acting.
I watched The King's Speech yesterday, it was a really good movie. And I think Colin Firth is definitely deserving of an Oscar. I'd have to see what else gets nominated and who else gets nominated. But just a fabulous show. I was there with George Lucas at the theater in Marin. And did I just name drop? I was there with George. I was there in the theater that George Lucas was
sitting like a couple of rows.
He was sitting like four rows behind me. Yeah.
Did you throw anything in? It's like, George, your movie sucks.
No, I did not. No, it was funny. Apparently, this is de rigueur for people who've lived in Marin for a long time, Marin County, north of San Francisco. George Lucas lives in Marin County. He lives not far from Lucasfilm, which is on Lucas Valley Road. No relation, by the way. That's just a coincidence. And he does go out to movies at the local theaters and goes to the diners and eats and everything. And everybody just is used to it and they don't make a big deal. And so, you know, Eileen, my wife and I were like that. We didn't make a big deal except to each other. Because we walked,
like, my God, that's George Lucas.
We got in line to buy the tickets, and we saw this guy up, you know, in line, and we sort of looked at each other and nodded, like, "Yep, that's definitely him." And then we're like, "Well, he's got to be seeing The King's Speech." I don't remember what the other show. It might have been The Fighter was the other show, but everybody in line was getting tickets for The King's Speech because that was the one that was starting next, and so we're like, "Well, he's got to be in the theater with us." So we go in, and of course, he sits down four rows behind us. We both get on Twitter immediately, you know. I got retweeted by the official Star Wars Twitter account.
It's like, Lucas sighting. Lucas, what's interesting is how giddy I still get when, especially even when I'm like in a place that you know you're going to run into a celebrity of some type or another. Like when I'm in LA, you know, every now and then I'll catch someone either at the airport or like in the same restaurant or something. And I get kind of giddy for some reason. And it's just like, I didn't get giddy at all,
but I did. Well, maybe I got a little giddy. I didn't like, you know, start chuckling or staring at him or wanting to look at him. But I was like, this is cool. This is weird to just be like in the same area. And what was weird about it was like, you just don't see famous people out in public normally. And George Lucas is a famous person. Even in Hollywood, even in L.A., they just, famous people just generally don't go out because they're worried about it causing a stir. And so I would give Marin County credit for being the kind of place that's like, you know what, we're used to this. I've heard the same thing about John Cougar Mellencamp in Seymour, Indiana, because he lives in a small town in Indiana. And it's the same way where they're like, yeah, we're used to it. We're used to him being there. And I think it's because they don't have a ton of stars. And so you don't have a ton of star watchers coming there.
Well, you know, it's for example, Chris Isaac still has a while ago, maybe he still does, still has an address in San Francisco. And for some reason, a friend of mine her friend gets his mail.
Yes. For some reason. I know that I'm also friends with her.
So our mutual friend. And I always find that kind of odd. It's like, so what do you get? Like his.
Well, it's one of those things where like he's on 355 48th and she's on 355 45th. And so sometimes the five looks like an eight to somebody and the mail goes to her instead of him. And she has to just kind of take it over to him. Like, oh, here's your mail.
One place I used to see a lot of celebrities, believe it or not, was the Exploratorium. And I think partially because when I used to work there, for anyone who doesn't know, the Exploratorium is kind of it's a science museum, but it's a hands-on science museum. So they have experiments and stuff that kids can play to learn about things like physics and chemistry and stuff. But for some reason, it's a huge attraction for celebrities with kids because they always take their kids there. So Tracy Ullman was there one time. What's his name? Mark from Mork and Mindy. Robin Williams goes there a lot because he lives in the city.
Interesting.
So you'll see him at least once, you know, at least once a year, if not maybe twice.
Well, and I've never experienced that. I've been to the Exploratorium, but I've never seen anyone famous there. So I guess that's why I got in trouble with Marin Maven on Twitter, who was like, why is it weird? It's not weird. You know, Marin is great. And I was like, well, I wasn't saying there anything bad. I wasn't using weird bad. She was like, weird is a bad word. I think we worked it out. She met me halfway, but I wasn't saying Marin is, because I said Marin is weird, and I meant it in like it's just this Twilight Zone sort of universe where you know you decide at 4 o'clock. Well, let's go see the King's Speech. What time's it planned? Should we go to the 5 or the 7:55? I don't know. Let's go to the 5. You go there. You get in line. George Lucas is in line in front of you. He's in the theater. You watch the movie. He leaves before you. You know, that's just life.
Oh, we're turning into a gossip show, Tom, talking about celebrities.
Let's talk about you, speaking of celebrities. No, what were you going to say?
Oh, no. It's just, it's funny because then things will start to agree. It's like, oh, what kind of, I saw him at the supermarket. Saw him at the supermarket? What did he buy?
No, you know, I think that's the thing is like the next time it happens, it won't be that big of a deal because I've already, it'd be like, oh, yeah, yeah.
He buys the non-fat milk.
That happens here. And I will have adjusted, and it won't seem so weird. It won't seem so strange. But I have never lived anywhere where someone of note mingled with the common man. So it was weird to me. That's all. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. what else has been going on this weekend for you?
Back to the movies. King's Speech, excellent. Go see it. Colin Firth is amazing. He keeps the stammer up. In case you don't know, the King George VI had a horrible stammer, but he became king during World War II, right before it, in the age of radio. So it was not only the thing to do as a king is to give radio addresses, but also kind of necessary to rally the populace in support of their country and to fight the Germans. Colin Firth pulls it off incredibly. You believe he's stammering. It's uncomfortable. It's not so uncomfortable. It's well written, so you don't just like get really frustrated. But the plot turns on him finding this Australian who isn't even a highly renowned doctor or anything. He just has a basement practice, you know, in this kind of shoddy area of London. I don't know if it's shoddy, but it's portrayed as obviously very not royal. And the king has to go, but even before he's king, and get treatment from him, and it works. He helps him get over his stammer.
Nice. That's cool.
Berwitt, you never saw me at Walmart buying underwear. I don't buy underwear at Walmart.
I actually order that online. It's hard to find my size.
Do you really? Is that true?
Yes. No, I buy
it at Target.
I used to, I buy it online.
I definitely don't buy it at Goodwill.
Well, the problem is the stuff I want is expensive in the stores, and I will only buy it online. I probably bet for the local retailers.
Web 2096 wants to know what kind of snacks you eat after dinner.
I don't actually snack. I try to avoid that, but when I do, and if I actually have any available, I'll eat apples. I really like apples. I don't know why. It's not only juicy, but it's a solid consistency, unlike, say, a peach or nectarine where the juices just kind of get all over the place. It just feels, you know, filling at the same time. It doesn't feel heavy.
X-Man says he eats balut. A partially fertilized chicken egg.
That's
great. Well, it's not partially, it's fertilized, but it's partially grown. I don't eat balut. I eat apples too. That is actually, especially when I'm trying to be strict about my diet, and like I'm only eating fish for dinner, which I'm actually doing that right now. I eat an apple. That'll be my sort of, you know, if I'm still hungry after dinner, I'll have an apple. Same reason. It's juicy. It's sweet. It fills you up, but it's perfectly healthy.
Yeah, and it's not heavy. There's nothing worse than, like, you know, occasionally I'll snack on, like, if I bought one, like a pie or something. But then after I eat it, it's like, maybe I should have eaten it.
Pie, but I never allow myself to purchase a pie, like a whole pie, at the grocery store because I will eat it. Last time I bought a pumpkin pie at the grocery store, it was on sale after Christmas. They had made all these pumpkin pies for Christmas dinners, and then they had extras, and they were trying to get rid of them. So I bought it. I ate the whole thing within a day.
So talk about, like, really banal things to do with our lives. Speaking of pies, I went to Whole Foods, and I really don't go to Whole Foods except for the donuts because they have these all-vegan donuts that are really tasty. So even if I eat one, and I know it's still bad for me because there's a lot of sugar and stuff in it, I feel that it's not as bad for me because it's vegan. In any case, I noticed that they sell half pies. They literally take a circular pie,
really?
Cut it in half, and package it in halves. It's like when you go to the supermarket, and they used to sell watermelon wedges. Instead of just buying a whole ball, you'd buy like a quarter of a watermelon. And it's the same concept. It's like, that's brilliant.
Skippy says it's National Pie Day today.
National Pie Day today. I wonder if I should bake that frozen pie I have.
You should. It's National Pie Day. I'm going to buy a pie right after the show.
Remember when we went up to San Rafael to get apple goods? Apple jam, apple.
Oh, yeah. Bread, on the chop down.
Yes, I bought two frozen pies for that very reason, because I would eat one around the holidays and then sometime around spring
or
the beginning of the year. I was like, I wish I had that pie, and I do.
You know, the chop down, for those of you who don't know, which is probably every single one of you, is an annual event that dates back to Patrick Norton's childhood, Patrick Norton, co-host of TechZilla, Patrick Norton's wife's childhood.
Right. And so I was about to say, I don't think people believe that Patrick actually had a child.
No, it's not. Yeah, he didn't. It's his wife that had one. And it involves going and chopping down a tree, hence the name Chop Down, for Christmas tree. Then going to go to a cider place, but this is the first year the cider place was closed. Then going to an apple farm and buying apples and apple pie and caramel covered apples, the Twin Hill Ranch. Then meeting up with George Lucas, then going to a bakery
that
makes incredible bread, just freaking, like, they must bake crack into it. I did the thing with the bread where we bought a loaf of pumpkin bread and put half of it in the freezer so that we could pull it out, put it in the oven, and have fresh hot pumpkin bread. That was good. We already did that, though. Now we're out of bread. We have to go back there.
I know. This sucks. Now you got to drive all the way back.
Then you finish up with dinner. But it's a great tradition. I was so honored and pleased to be invited into the annual Chop Down. It's like one of my favorite things about the holidays now. If his wife decides not to do it some year, I'm going to do it anyway, I think.
I like the apple orchard because it's a great... I didn't realize...
Well, because you eat so many apples.
Well, it's not just the apples. I did not realize you could make so many different food products from apple, right? I mean, you get your apple bread. You talk about the caramel apples, apple pie, of course.
Apple chips. But, you know,
apple chips, apple preserves.
Apple butter.
Apple butter. There's also apple juice. Of course, that's separate from apple cider. I don't know how, but somehow they are different.
I think there's more particles in the cider. Apple juice is strained. It's just the juice.
apples. They sell bags of apples.
They sell. In fact, you get a if you're smart, you pick up a coupon at the Christmas tree place for the free bag of apples, and then you get the free bag of apples at the Twin Hill Ranch because they have all these small apples that aren't going to be really saleable. People aren't going to want them because they're small, so they put them all in a bag. I mean, they're not super small. They're probably just a little smaller than your fist. Unless you have a very small hands, unless you have Sarah Lane size hands, and then you get this big bag full of apples,
which
free.
Is great,
absolutely free, and they have a train to give the kitties a ride, little kitty train.
Well, technically, it's more of a lawn tractor with a bunch of little carts.
Yeah, but it's
it.
Decorated like a train.
Yes, it is. Keeps the kids happy.
And if you're a Windows fan, they don't care because they're not that kind of apple.
Steve Jobs already going. Well, actually, I think he's officially out.
Yes,
so.
He is on medical leave. That is correct.
I always find that kind of weird when you have such an iconic head of a business to go on, because there's so many rumors around it, and you know, the things about the way stocks perform, especially in light of that news. I mean, would someone say like the head of Safeway had to step down because of a medical illness, where people are going to say, oh no, Safeway is a chain of supermarkets here in the Bay Area. Safeway like going to go under?
Although when Bill Gates decided to step down from Microsoft, a lot of people said the same thing about Microsoft, and a lot of people are still saying it.
So there
are definitely situations where that's the case. I can't tell if it's because I work in technology news that I think that Steve Jobs is probably one of the most followed CEOs in the country. I mean, Apple is the second most valuable company, according to the stock exchange, in the United States, anyway.
So my question is, like, if you took another industry that's out of the tech industry, say it's a chain of hotels or maybe an
automotive
industry.
I think entertainment industry is a good parallel.
It's a good parallel because you have high-profile CEOs or a presence or someone in charge, someone that is not just known as a name but also known, you know, what he looks like, what he does, what his opinions are. I wonder if that's a double-edged sword because, you know, high-profile CEOs and stuff can often help their company by saying or performing certain actions in public that lead other people to believe something may or may not be afoot.
In the entertainment industry, the heads of the studios are followed just as religiously and with just as much divisiveness as Bill Gates, Larry Ellison, Paul Otellini, and of course Steve Jobs are in the tech industry. I just don't think I know about it as much because I don't follow the entertainment industry as closely. I wonder, and I don't know, if other industries, say the apparel industry or the food industry, have similar situations. We just don't know about them because we're not in that industry. I think it is different because Steve Jobs makes the evening news, and I don't think too many other CEOs do.
So Web 2096 brought up Ted Turner from CNN, and it's true. I mean, He was someone that was well known and well regarded for what he, you know.
Trump.
Donald Trump is another one. Of course, you kind of see him on TV a lot too because he does that show. Does he still do that show where he tells people they're fired? The Apprentice.
Yeah, The Apprentice. Right.
I don't know. I think at some point, I mean, do people separate the company from or not separate, but the reverse? Do they just identify the company with whoever's running it in the same way that people say identify a country with its head of state?
I think technology is a bigger deal in the business news landscape than most other industries, and so therefore it's overcovered. And it lends itself to creating a star like a Bill Gates or a Steve Jobs. Whereas the food industry, it's not overcovered. You don't have big stories about the new snack food coming from General Mills. And so you don't have the limelight. Whereas something like an iPhone, just it gets national attention outside of even the tech media. And so it's associated with the heads of those companies. Martha Stewart, that's an interesting
example. I mean, like, did
Larry
did her,
Flint is a good example.
So
Hugh Hefner, obviously.
So when Martha Stewart went to jail, did any of her stuff, did she had her own company, right? A Martha Stewart.
She still does.
Did that dip any when she was sentenced or at least convicted?
Well, yeah.
Like, so
what do you mean? Did the stock dip? Of course it did.
Yeah. Well, and that's so. I mean, at what point? I don't know. It's just in so much is tied to who's at
top. You know what? I think Sam Walton may be the '80s equivalent of Steve Jobs. He was a total celebrity. He was on the cover of Time magazine. Everybody was. Sam Walton's changing the way business is done. I think it's just the technology. Oddly enough, Forbes had a really interesting article today saying that, arguing, at least the person who wrote it was arguing that the United States is falling far behind in technology and engineering, even though technology is probably more popular now than it's ever been. And he makes that point. He's like, look, it's amazing. Everybody's going gaga over the iPhone, and yet nobody wants to be an engineer or a scientist. The United States is falling behind because 70% of the people who go to college to become an engineer or a scientist are from other countries, and most of them leave and go back to their countries. We're falling behind in math and science education in the United States because we don't value that skill, even though we value its product.
And, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, you know, whether or not if one goes through, I mean, my cousin went through electrical engineering and he came with a job. It was decent paying, but it wasn't great paying. In other words, the financial incentive wasn't there. And so what happened is 3 or 4 years later, he went back to school and got a law degree so he could essentially make more money. For the amount of time, effort, and money he spent on his education, what he got out of it, he, you know, as a programmer, wasn't a lot. And so the question is it that we don't pay or we don't value those types of opportunities? Because I knew a lot of people in school who were computer science majors, but a lot of them kind of fell out because there wasn't enough money in doing what they were doing.
But then I've heard the opposite. I've heard that like they just can't find qualified engineers. That U.S. companies are often having trouble finding people to fill the jobs that they have.
And what I've heard, and this is just from my friends, so it's completely anecdotal to their viewpoint, is like, yeah, no one's going to hire them to do that much work for that little pay. In other words, they can't find people at that price, at that pay level in order to do the work, right? So if you're going to burn 60-70 hours a week coding and stuff, and you're going to get essentially the equivalent of what you could be doing if you had a liberal arts degree and worked half as many hours, is it worth doing? It's one of those quality of life versus occupation scenarios where people are looking at it's like, do I really want this job, make this little, and still be burnt out after 4 or 5 years? I don't know. There's two sides to it, and there's probably a grain of truth in both, and it'd be really kind of interesting to see, to do a very cohesive analysis of everything and see where the actual issues lie. Does it lie with not enough educated workers? Does it lie with companies not willing to fork over enough money to pay people to do a good job? So I don't know.
This article on Forbes was saying the problem lies in education. We are not we are 40th in the world in math and science education. We are just not educating people in math and science the way we need to. Do you think that's true?
Yes and no. I do believe that education. I mean, I had to actually take my calculus class in my junior college, and it's interesting because there are people wanting to learn, but I mean, is the message is society saying that those are degrees worth having? No one does an exciting show on a guy who has a coding or has a science degree or engineering degree unless he's like some super agent or something. So I don't know. It's more of a question: does society value it? Does society value it enough to kind of create an atmosphere where those people are celebrated, and in not just kind of a very condescending or patronizing way where it's like, oh, you do great work, but where you really value it in the same way that we value, say, athletes or entertainers or even politicians.
Well, and that was actually his point. He said in other countries, engineers and scientists are celebrities, that they, you know, that in Korea, they are considered like hugely important leaders of society, whereas in the United States, they're not. Engineers and scientists are just thought of as geeks and dweebs and weirdos and, you know, possibly people trying to fool us.
Well, so both of us having no kids, we're going to talk about... Have you read... There's that... who's that author? Amy Chow or whatever, who wrote The Tiger Mom? She wrote that book on, like, you know, the Chinese way of parenting. It might be considered pushy, but it leads to
Eric, you know, let me just say, Eric Savitz is the person who wrote the article on Forbes. Yes. Danger, America is losing its edge in innovation. I visited more than 100 countries in the past several years, meeting people from all walks of life, from impoverished children in India to heads of state. Almost every adult I've talked to within these countries shares a belief that the path to success is paved with science and engineering. In fact, scientists and engineers are celebrities in most countries. They're not seen as geeks or misfits, as they too often are in the United States, but rather as society's leaders and innovators. In China, 8 of the top 9 political posts are held by engineers. In the United States, almost no engineers or scientists are engaged in high-level politics, and there is a virtual absence of engineers in our public policy debates.
That is true. It's hard to say. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, a lot of really intelligent people that I've met who can build and design incredible things aren't people with degrees. They are people who either went to Caltech or something and literally just dropped out not mid-year, but like at 2 or 3 years in. But they're still incredible. They're still incredible designers. They can build, you know, they can build some amazing devices. And I don't know. I mean, the thing is, a lot of those are counting degrees. They don't count competency. So you could theoretically create a system where you churn out, you know, you entice people with financial rewards, but again, well, if you know, is the rest of the infrastructure there to support it, to support all these new engineers and graduates, the ones that, you know, are, you know, potentially wanting to you know, maybe not make, you know, a huge amount of money, but make sure, but definitely a healthy bump over, you know, what they would be making if they, say, had an English major and ended up being a writer for a popular newspaper or magazine. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see in about 10 to 15 years what happens. Are we going to have to import engineers? Are we going to have to import? I mean, we already import doctors.
We import engineers already too.
And you know, it's
we try to keep as many of them who go to our colleges from going back home as we can.
It's what was it? I think like a majority, over half of the doctors in the U.S. are over 65. They're like retirement age.
Yeah,
they're gonna be retiring soon. And so what you're gonna see is a huge gap in the number of available doctors who can treat versus the number of patients, because there's gonna be more people that to treat.
I think there's something to the idea that we are failing in education, and that is at bottom of a lot of the problems with the United States. We are ranked number 48. I said 40. 48 in quality of math and science education, according to the World Economic Forum. And the fact that we don't have people, we don't have enough doctors. We just are entirely failing to educate people. They don't want to learn. They want to get out of high school and college. What will get them the easiest job. And there's nothing in high school or college to dissuade them from that or encourage them or even teach them to think for themselves. I mean, we've talked about that on East Meets West a bunch of times. We do not teach people to think critically. We do not teach math and science very well. And that is the biggest oversight to the United States. Every politician pays lip service to education. I'll grant you that. In fact, in Barack Obama's State of the Union address on Tuesday, the president will talk about education. It's one of the key points of his address, apparently. But that's a whole lot different from actually prioritizing it. Talking about it and prioritizing it are two different things. Education is always one of the first things that a government slashes, Republican or Democrat, when they have to cut the budget.
And what's maddening is that, I mean, we can voice blame on politicians and you know, past and current presidents. The truth is, it's really a societal thing. It's something that needs to be addressed at a community, at a society level, where we say, yeah, these are things that we want. We say we want them, but no one wants to do it. I mean, I went through a computer science, you know, on a degree for like a year and a half before I decided that I don't really want to deal with it. But it's not an easy thing to do. There's a lot of work involved. There's a lot of higher math involved. And, you know, if it's something that we tell people, it's, well, if it's too hard, you can try something else. Instead of saying, hey, you know what? Might be hard now, but it's going to pay off in spades, yeah, you know, down the road or something. I don't know. I mean, my dad was a structural engineer. He was a structural engineer for Bechtel for over 6 years until he got laid off. That's all he did. And that's kind of what the mindset was for a lot of, at least from his generation, a lot of Chinese that came over from Taiwan. You got a professional degree. I mean, he ended up going into real estate and then buying a restaurant. So a lot of his training eventually kind of fell by the wayside. But I don't know. It's really hard to. There's so many factors involved. The more I look at it, I mean, people like to make very broad brush strokes about, you know, what the causes are, like too much MTV, too much TV, too much internet, not enough school, too much extracurricular activities and sports and stuff. And I think it's a little bit of everything. It's not just one thing. It's not one thing you say, you stop this and you do this, it's going to fix it. It's not going
to
happen.
We're fooling ourselves to death in the United States. That's what I think is happening. Because even with this issue, even with me just saying, you know what, education is being under-prioritized, we have a lot of people in the chat room with their own interpretation of that and what that issue is. And I'm not going to name names and I'm not going to point out examples because I don't want to get into a trolling flame war. But some of those things being said are very ignorant and not well thought out, and some of them are. And the problem is, a lot of the ignorant and not well thought out statements, and I don't mean you, a lot of those ignorant and not well thought out statements are parroting what is heard or read on your favorite left or right wing commentator's blog or radio show. And you don't have the resources to think your way past it. We get fooled because we haven't been educated enough to know the difference. We like to say, well, this happens overseas or this happens, and it's not true. It's easier to think in simplicities than it is to think in complexities, and things are complex. And so we can't just say, like, well, the problem is X. It's not that simple. No. You can't sum it up in a single sentence. And because you can't, you can never win the argument. You can never actually get to the thing that will improve, because what's going to happen is when you start to say, well, I think we need to teach more critical thinking, each side of the debate in our two-sided debates in the United States grabs on to their rhetoric and makes their simplistic statement and starts bolstering all kinds of rhetoric and solipsism and slippery slopes to fool you into believing their side of the argument. But none of it is actually concerned with encountering the truth or getting as close to the truth or achieving something as possible. And because we allow that to happen, because it's so much more comfortable to believe in our side's rhetoric, we actually don't improve things. And you can see that. You can see that happening over the last 20 to 30 years as we just meander and nothing happens. Nothing changes. Charter schools, independent schools, homeschooling, all of these things have benefits. Do we actually have a group of people who are willing to set aside prejudices and pull the best things out of all of these models and create a system? And then do we have the willpower as a country to back the thing that seems to work most and put it into place? No, we don't. What we have is bunch of people who are just willing to use the arguments for their own political advantage and advance their party line, and whether kids learn or not, be damned. Pisses me off.
Well, in my view, I don't really think the answer and answer will come in a very kind of broad reaching national approach. It's going to actually have to come from a very community directed level, because you know when you're dealing with so many a variety of issues, you know, one organization cannot deal with with all those factors. What you can do is help support communities. Say, like, if there's a deficit in easy transportation that allows kids to get to school so they can't stay for longer periods, say after 3 o'clock in school, maybe that community will develop a system of transit, or perhaps some sort of alternative way to get to, you know, get kids to school that doesn't require them coming home, you know, 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening. On the other hand, you might have a school that turns out really bright students, very ready to go into a four-year institution to do, you know, higher level math, higher level science. But at the end of the line, it's like, you know, what do? I have someone I worked with a couple of years ago. She has a master's in chemical engineering. No money in it. None whatsoever. What she told me she would be making her first year, I was like, really? You spent that much time, you spend that much effort, and it's not something that it's not something you get out of a vending machine. She said, like, you know, I actually would make 2.5 times much just selling the stuff rather than trying to develop it. And I was just like, you know, it's almost perverse, the incentives. We incentivize things that will help us out in the short run, but not in the long run, where we need to have, you know, where we need to look at things 20, 30, 40, 50 years down the road instead of looking at it in 5, 4, 3, 2 year turnaround times. And it's, you know, it's, people understand that, but I honestly believe people don't appreciate it. Understanding and appreciation are two different things. You know, someone can say, you know, I understand that eating healthy is going to help prolong my life, but they don't really appreciate it, and they're going to go out and eat things that aren't necessarily the best for their health. They'll eat high cholesterol foods, they'll eat high sugary foods, and you know, it's like, I know I should do better, and they know, but they won't do anything because they don't have the willpower, like you were saying. They don't have the wherewithal to kind of force the change upon them until something happens. Say they have a cardiac arrest or stroke or something. You know, where you literally have to kick the chair out of someone's ass to get them to notice.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're over time. So I want to thank Nicholas Sanders, Scott Theed, The Real Big B Wolf, Ryan, Will, and Cool B, all for their comments, mostly about dress coveralls on subbrilliant.com/EMW.
Best idea ever. I'm telling you.
You've got a lot of good reading there with people giving you some good ideas for the widespread use of dress coveralls. For instance, Will thinks Kim Jong-il's all brown, all zippered outfit is pretty close.
You know, if he touched it up with some brighter colors or something, then, you know, could be something worth looking at.
You can watch us, as I mentioned at the top of the show, every Sunday on the Twit Network, live.twit.tv. We start doing East Meets West right after This Week in Tech. It's around 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific. And, of course, you can find us on the web, subbrilliant.com/EMW. We'll see you later.
Bye.
About this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.